Secondly, the games that were held at Olympia not only were held in this religious setting, but originally were primarily about individual athletes and not their states, although that would change. The Olympic Games, in fact, arise from a feature of Greek culture which will become more and more important from the 8th century onwards. That is, the agonistic spirit of the Greeks. This term comes from the Greek expression the agon, which means the contest. And the notion that there is a contest at the core of life is really a central Greek idea. Athletes at the Olympic Games, particularly in its early days, were competing to display their personal excellence, their arete, which is a Homeric term that refers to their manly vigour and their qualities as warriors. This is the same quality that Homer's warriors try to display on the battlefield. Furthermore, what the athlete at Olympia is trying to win for himself, for his family and for his community, is what the Greeks would call kleos aphthiton, which means undying glory. This also is a phrase which is taken directly out of Homer. So the games, in about 776, originally then are a venue for competition, not between states, but between aristocratic men and boys as well. These are age competitions, so there are boys' versions of these games, who will compete, running, jumping, boxing, wrestling, chariot racing as well, and who are doing so explicitly modelling themselves then on a Homeric pattern. Now, this becomes clear not only when we consider the competition at Olympia, but when we consider what also arises from it. If you win at Olympia, the chances are that you will go to a poet and you will commission that poet to write an ode, a victory song on your behalf. And these victory songs are not national anthems at all, but rather they're songs, and we have many of these, particularly from the Boeotian poet Pindar, which celebrate the individual and his success at the Olympics, and do so by tying the individual and his Olympic victory to two other elements. One will be the victories of his forefathers. So such and such will be said to be the grandson of a man who was victorious and the nephew of an uncle who was victorious in boxing or wrestling, what have you. These are heroic genealogies, if you will. And the second element that we'll find here in the poems of Pindar will be a reference to mythology, where a myth involving the early history of either that family or perhaps of some other family will be used again as a way of connecting this contemporary man to a long-gone golden age. What I'm suggesting here is that we have an extremely interesting pattern of ideas and behaviour. What it is this. Homer, as we know, has encoded the morality of the Greeks and taught them how to behave. At Olympia, what we will find is that that code is enacted. It becomes the place in the real world of the 8th century where people can display their Homeric sense of what it is to be a Greek and to be a man. The one encodes, the other enacts. Now, what becomes particularly interesting in the history of Olympia is that this originates quite clearly in the world of aristocratic competition, men behaving like Agamemnon and Odysseus. But as city-states grow more and more powerful, they will have an investment in these victories as well. So that what originates as competition between individuals will eventually come to be competition between individuals representing their states. And in that respect, the ancient Olympics become very much like the modern Olympics, freighted with competition between states.